All right, folks, we'd like to welcome into the podcast Patrick Reed, calling in from a coffee shop all the way down in Melbourne. We apologize if the audio is not great during this interview. Let's get right into it, Patrick. You've been accused of cheating, fixing your lie in the bunker. What do you want to say for yourself right now?
Was that wrong? Should I not have done that?
Well, yeah, Patrick, it was wrong. It's against the rules. People are saying your intentions were to blatantly cheat. What do you say about that?
I tell you, I got to plead ignorance on this thing, because if anyone had said anything to me at all when I first started here, that sort of thing was frowned upon.
Patrick, I'm going to cut you off there. What do you mean if somebody told? It's in the rules. Everybody knows it's in the rules. So you clearly know what you're doing.
I've worked in a lot of offices, and I tell you, people do that all the time.
Patrick, what are you talking about offices? We're talking about golf here, and no one does this all the time. The only person that is constantly cheating is you. Now you're just lying at this point.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Jerry, never mind. Scotty, we can't have these type of guests on. Cancel the interview. We're done here. All right, we are back on the Tee Talk podcast, brought to you by Flagstick.com. My name is Stefan Tiedorf, sitting across from me, back in the studio after a week off. We took a little vacation there, on an unannounced vacation. Scotty McLeod, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. Looking forward to chatting some golf, catching up. Yeah, it's had a week off there, and I've missed it.
Yeah, you were out in California. What were you doing out in California? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, just a little product preview with TaylorMade, looking some stuff for 2020. Sitting down and chatting with some tour players as well, which we'll have we'll talk about a little bit later with a feature guest that's this week, and then collecting some content as well that we'll be able to share for our listeners early in the new year as well.
I love it. I'm looking forward to all that. And as you said, we do have a TaylorMade staffer on the podcast this week. We'll get to that in a bit, because we got a lot to get into.
A lot.
Let's start with Henrik Stenson. He picked up a win at the Hero World Challenge. We'll move to the next topic.
Well, I know we're going really, really fast. So, I mean, how much did you watch?
I peeped it a little bit. I mean, yeah. When Tiger gets into contention at any event, and, you know, it was a fun event to watch. You know, you got the big names in play down there, obviously. And when Stenson's doing his ball striking Stenson, then you got to watch that as well. But Tiger got right back into it, which made it exciting for a bit. Then Stenson just kind of blew away. And I think the big thing is
something else happened.
Yeah, the three wood has been replaced for Henrik. So it's official. Maybe it never was the three wood. Probably never was. So there's one thing, a hint, hint.
Yeah.
But yeah, then on Saturday, Patrick Reed did what Patrick Reed does. And I don't know how to word it any other way than he cheated.
That would be the way to definitely
He basically had a bad lie in a bunker, and on his backswing he brushed the sand out, and it looks like to me he actually did it twice, if I'm not
twice.
Mistaken.
Yep.
Yeah, he actually did it
which
twice.
Made it really, really unusual.
Yeah, and then so he does that twice, and then, you know, doesn't call himself on it, plays a shot, whatever. After the round, they give him a 2-stroke penalty. Basically said, oh, I didn't realize that I even did it, you know, in my words, not in his.
Sure.
And Patrick Reed just continues to be one
Patrick
of
Patrick Reed.
Yeah, Patrick Reed. What were your thoughts watching it, and, you know, the outcome on Twitter and everything?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's dominated Twitter, the conversation since then. Immediately, a lot of things. I mean, first off, obviously you have a rules violation, you know, again, those things happen for sure. A lot of people talking about intent. It's hard to get inside someone's head and determine, you know, what they thought. Did I think it was highly unusual? Yeah, for sure. I mean, for a player at that level, you know, when you're setting up to hit a shot, unless you're not looking at down where the club is and not seeing that sand fly out of there, I mean, it seemed pretty obvious whether, you know, he thought it was like, you know, had something to do with the camera angle, which I thought was kind
of
unusual. But I think part
what
of
what happens when I move the sand, is it the camera angle there?
Yeah, 100%. So I think the real issue here, and I know we're going to get into it, is that it is Patrick Reed. You know, this is a player who obviously has a reputation. This is not his first dance in this situation. When you deal with things like integrity and reputation, you have one. That's all you get. And it's really hard. People do make mistakes. They, you know, but they have to have contrition for that and maybe admit those mistakes. But one, he did not handle it well. He has not handled it well. He did his press conference today and he basically, you know, sloughed it off. The other thing that happened here is, you know, tied into obviously the President's Cup this week. Basically, you know, he's talking about the other players, be it Cameron Smith talking about him and calling him a cheater and trying to tie it into the President's Cup and trying to say, oh, well, you know, they're just saying these things because, you know, they're on the other side. Well, no, it has not really a lot to do with that. They're not talking about it relative to the President's Cup. They're talking about it relative to that situation where, you know, you visibly violated a rule, did not want to admit it. Got called a great guy still by Slugger White from the PGA Tour, which again I thought was pretty unusual. But you know,
the player,
but the players own the tour,
yeah,
and that's
exactly
what, that's what people have to realize here too. You know, and not to, you know, sit there and say the PGA Tour is bad or anything like that, but you have to understand the PGA Tour is owned by the players. This is not a league that's, you know, a separate entity and has these other athletes. The players own the PGA Tour, so. They own the rights, they own their content, they own everything, so they're going to do as much as possible to do as much damage control as possible, be it their rules officials or otherwise. So, you know, it's a well-orchestrated machine. So I know we're going to get into it here, and I think the real big issue is the fact that, yes, you know, it's not his first rodeo. He definitely has a reputation of things that he's done in the past, and maybe if it wasn't him, it probably would have been a little treated a lot differently. People would have said, you know, it's a two-stroke penalty. Away you go.
And they probably would have admitted it rather than just try to, oh, might have been the camera angle.
Right, yeah. If we look at Brian Davis a number of years ago at Hilton Head where, you know, he was in a hazard and realized he quickly that he brushed a piece of grass inside the hazard and called the penalty on himself because, you know, he realized what was happening. He was aware of the situation and understands it's about integrity in this golf game and, you know, same as it is in any other sport. But he obviously didn't show a lot of integrity here.
Patrick Reed's one of the best players in the world.
No doubt.
Let's say 100,000 bunker shots, probably.
Yeah.
That's not, like, if you look at practice and everything, he's so good that if a blade of grass touched the back of his club, he's going to notice it.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's acting like he didn't notice the sin when he 100% knew he hit it on the first practice swing and on the actual shot, he knows exactly what he's doing. And I think Will Grave of the Golf Channel had a great tweet today. Basically, he was at the press conference and Patrick Reed said, I wasn't intentionally trying to prove a lie or anything like that, because if I was, it would have been a really good lie and I would have hit it really close.
Yeah.
And then Will goes, this man simply cannot read a room.
Right. Exactly.
That's exactly it. Patrick Reed has zero self-awareness.
No, and you could see that during the press conference. I mean,
didn't he show up late to his
Well, that was because the team was out there and it was a half hour late, so that wasn't his fault. At first, I thought maybe he was going to be a no-show, it seemed, for a while, but it turned out the players were out there and things were running late. You know, I get that. But during the press conference itself, you could see just the look on his face. He was automatically on defense, which you'd expect he's going to be, because you know the first bunch of questions that are going to happen are going to be straight about, you know, cheating and being called a cheater and all this, and they were, if you go through and read the transcript, and I did watch the press conference. But you could see the look on his face. It was just, you know, it's like he didn't care. And he just, you know, he had his defense sort of made up and what he was going to plan to do and talk about and try to defend it. And it didn't come off very, very well at all. He didn't really make any more friends within the media. Not that he really cares. And he said that during the press conference. He doesn't really care what anybody thinks.
He's not allowed friends. Justine won't let him have
I guess. But, I mean, for him to say that, too, I mean, he just doesn't care. He's like, as long as I know what I'm doing is right and,
but
you know, I'm doing my thing.
Yeah.
That's just being oblivious is really what it is. Because, you know, the thing is sometimes you get caught up in yourself. And a lot of other players or a lot of other commentators talked about that, you know, he's just not aware of what he's actually done. And I mean,
kind of reminds me of like Bubba Watson when he first got on the tour.
Right.
Kind of had that whole same thing. He wasn't aware of himself. He wasn't aware of his attitude. He wasn't aware that his cameras are always on him.
Mm-hmm.
He would say things I mean, he still has a little bit of his little tempers here and there, but I think he became aware of the image of Bubba Watson pretty quickly. And I don't think Patrick Reed's getting there, and I don't think he ever will get there. Speaking of commentators, Dale Hayes had an interesting take where he basically said, you know, I watched the video, you cheated, and you improved your lie, you didn't admit it, and based on that, you should be banned from professional golf for a substantial amount of time. Do you agree with that, though? I think that might be a bit of aggressive.
Yeah, I think that's a little aggressive. Again, we're talking about something that's a two-stroke penalty.
Should have been a four. Also,
well, no,
you don't think so?
No, it's one incident, and that's the way the rule reads. It's one incident.
So if I got a five-stroke lead heading on 18, I just got this fried egg in a bunker.
The rules are the rules.
That's so I
the
can way just fix it once.
It's
and
considered. It's considered one incident. So right. I mean, you know, the rules are laid out that way. You know, whether we like it or not, we have to live with them. Should he be banned from golf? I mean. I don't think so, but I think this pattern of behavior, I think, is not good for his brand. I will tell you that. I mean, he's got to really be understanding that. And you know, I think the players themselves, they're going to police it. They're really going to police it. And
Cameron Davies going out and saying what he did is already a start. The reason you're not hearing more, especially from the American team, is the timing.
Well, sure. Exactly. Yeah. It's their team event going on right now. So they're not going to say it. Whether JT today, you know, dug into him over the, you know, played around in the bunker.
It was
and said,
so cheesy.
Yeah, it was so sort hard. Of cheesy. And he probably shouldn't have done
Only
it.
Only golf can make something like a controversy seem so vanilla.
Well, that was part of the problem, too, is it just makes it look like it's, oh, well, we don't care. And we're casual with the rules and whatever and no big deal. But, you know, they'll make him play. They'll make him pay. I mean, other players are not going to give him a pass. I think that's part of the issue, though, when we talk about professional sports, when we talk about sports in general, that talented athletes often get a pass. And I think that is something that's wrong in the culture of sport, is that people ignore, you know, issues just because a person is talented.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, in the end, it can catch up, as we're seeing now in the NHL and a lot of different things that are happening in different sports as well.
Power, man. It can bring out the worst in people.
It can. And they sort of just look at it and go, oh, well, you know, but he's a great player. And okay, that's great. But, you know, how is that different than if it's, you know, a college-age player or a young pro or someone else? I mean, we're talking about Patrick Reed, who... God love him. He helps out the AJGA, and he's a big sponsor for the AJGA, and he sponsors their bag tag program. He actually has a bag tag with his kid's name on it, you know, for 2036. That's on his golf bag. You're supposed to be an ambassador for junior golf. And what are you teaching junior golfers? You can get away with it if you're a good player and you have talent. That's not a good message.
So what do you think about this? You said he broke a rule. Now, I saw a great take on Twitter. This is just things I saw on Twitter episode where this lad said, you know, someone taking an incorrect drop is breaking a rule.
Right.
This was blatant cheating on purpose.
The problem is that you can't, you don't know intent. Yeah, you well, don't, you fair, don't, but... don't know intent. The rules don't take into intent. So we don't know if he was, sure, it looked bad, but we don't know if he was trying to do that. It looks that way, but we can't guarantee that. We don't know that for sure. That he stood up there and said, I want to improve my life.
Here's why I say, I mean, let's go on history here. I'm going to list off Patrick Reed's history.
And this, as we've talked about, is why it's a
big issue. So let's go back to the University of Georgia, where Kevin Kisner has quoted, I don't know if they were teammates at the time, I don't believe they were, but he's basically said, if Patrick Reed was on fire, guys wouldn't pee on him to put it out.
Yeah.
That's how nobody likes him at the University of Georgia.
And that's big for someone to say publicly, right?
Publicly. I mean, yeah. Kevin Kisner doesn't have a filter anyway, but still, publicly, you still got to play at this guy.
Right.
So there's a start. He was basically accused of cheating during rounds.
Yeah.
He was accused of stealing from the...
A putter from a locker.
From the locker room. The coach basically, after this article came out, didn't say like those are true, but he said everything in the article is everything we know of Patrick Reed here. And then like if you go into later, you know, using homophobic slurs while on camera at the WGC HSBC, which is, you know, it was 2014. It's 10 years. It's 10, 20 years. It shouldn't have been doing it ever.
No.
the Red Sox tickets tweet. You remember that? He got free Red Sox tickets
and complained.
From the PGA Tour, and he complained. So then he goes, oh, I spent $650 a ticket to upgrade. Like, cool. Like, you know, it's Red Sox tickets. You got in the building for free when everyone else, you make more money than everyone else in there.
Right.
You're in there for free because there was a net in the way. Who knows? And then, okay, we go to the U.S. Open a few years ago. He kicks his parents out. I know, you know, family matters are family matters. I get that. But, like, they weren't doing any harm for you just watching you play golf, which is just a bad look anyway. And I'm not getting into his family.
No.
Confronting a cameraman.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
I certainly
do. With the loose change and all that stuff. This list goes on. And then if you go to the Ryder Cup last year, or 2 years ago, he was basically threw out all the dirty laundry. His wife throws out more dirty laundry on Twitter.
And
he
threw his teammates under the bus.
Throws his teammates under the bus, throws the captain under the bus. Now, the captain got thrown under the bus a little bit by multiple players. And disagreements. That happens regardless. But Patrick went another way, took things outside of the room. And it's not like, as you mentioned, hockey. It's not like these are bullying situations.
No, no.
These are decisions. That is different.
Yeah.
And to bring those outside the
room. It just shows a level of immaturity for someone. I mean, this is an adult. He should know better.
What is he, 33, 31, something like that?
He should know better by now. As far as from a maturity level, you know, he's making a lot of poor decisions. And really, you know, he's worn out a number of agents. You know, and you can see, imagine if you're an agent and having to deal with the fallout all the time for this type of stuff. So
think about the brands. He's played with multiple different equipment brands. The fact that now he's doing Patrick Reed irons himself with a different brand.
Yeah,
you
which
can get
we
into
don't even
that.
Know yet.
I don't even know which brand it is there. So like, I wouldn't doubt that there's equipment manufacturers out there that haven't offered him a second contract too.
Well,
again, they want to deal with him as well.
Again, this is the issue. It's like, you know, you look at it and you go, do you really want anything that you do to be tied to this guy just because he performs?
Nope.
I mean, you know, rewarding a person for poor behavior is just, it's not cool in my book. It's just not cool in my book.
I agree. And I think we don't need to reward him with any more of our time at this
100%.
Point. We beat this to death. Everyone's beat it to death. I'm happy to see.
Well, you know what? It's added a little edge to the President's Cup this week.
That's true.
It's added a little element. And obviously we've been talking, and we'll talk about it more this week. We've been talking about what this event sort of needs. And you know what? The player's going to be fired up to take on Patrick Reed. And God knows what the spectators are going to do.
Before we get into the President's Cup, because we got a lot to get in there, there's now a new worst trophy out there in golf.
Oh yeah, I saw a few of them there.
The Bermuda Triangle Trophy. You're now number two, as this trophy on the Stayshirt Tour. For the lack of better words, looks like
genitalia.
Yeah, male genitalia. Let's leave it at that, which led to probably one of my favorite tweets of all time by Eddie Pepperell. I mean, this guy, every week.
Oh, he was going hard.
He says, so go to Eddie Pepperell's Twitter if you want to find it, at Pepperell Eddie. On December 8th, he basically retweeted this photo of this trophy and says, one of the greatest trophies I've seen. Congrats, Peter. Did you have to think extra carefully about where you kissed it after holding it aloft? I don't know what they were thinking on this trophy. It's a tough look. I am sure there's some sort of sponsors take with it, but congrats to the Bermuda Championship.
We're going to end up with a top 10 at some point. We're going to have to create
top 10 worst trophies in sports.
I think we're going to have to come up with one for sure.
Just in
golf, not even sports in general.
Enough.
I think we're going to get there.
But why don't we head over to the President's Cup? It does start this weekend, correct? What time will it be on?
Late in the evening each time. We've got the dates around 7 o'clock or so.
Okay,
in the
so
evening.
Prime
so,
time.
Yeah, so it'll be good that way. It'll run fairly late. I know for myself, I was keeping an eye on some other events down in Australia in the last couple of days, and those ran till pretty much 1 a.m. So not too bad. So
yeah, I am excited for the President's Cup now. I wasn't. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I think an international team will be, you know, they have some motivation. They will have the crowd behind them, which hasn't been the past and hasn't been the case in the past in Australia with Tiger coming. They love Tiger. I do think at the end of the day, though, talent still is going to overpass these things. But the American team has had all the talent in the world before, and things haven't gone their way.
Yeah, and I mean, the only time that obviously there was a win by the international team, it was here at Royal Melbourne. The only difference in 98 was that season ended early, and the U.S. players, you know, admittedly came in not very sharp. They'd been off for a month already. And that sort of played into it a little bit. But, you know, given we got a lot of rookies, so a lot of wild cards as far as the international team, I think 7 rookies out of the 12. And we've got a firm and fast golf course, and it's pretty fiery, and it's going to play different. So that's going to be the X factor. You know, you're not talking about a standard American golf course, just getting up there and hitting it wherever you want and just landing it. You're going to have to hit a lot of shots. It's going to be like a chess match out there. So I think that's going to lend to the tournament as well.
For example, I saw a replay of the last President's Cup there, and the caddy conversation with, I believe it was Webb Simpson, actually. And he was basically like, okay, you have 85 to the flag,
but
which is a wedge out of the fairway, 85 to the flag, but I want you to land the 63.
Yeah.
So Webb lands at 65,
and it
basically
goes?
And it goes off over the back with a wedge in your hand by the best player. That's how firm this place is going to be. It's going to be really cool golf. There are question marks coming out of the U.S. team for me. Dustin Johnson coming off an injury, hasn't played in a long time.
Yeah, took the week off last week, obviously.
Ricky Fowler coming off that sickness, the marriage. That's not a bad thing. He got married. It took him away from the golf course.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Bryson DeChambeau and his bodybuilding thing.
I don't know what the deal is there.
Where he's saying his abs are his biggest muscle on his body.
And
like,
he just switched
science.
Down to a 4.8 degree driver for this week. He dropped down from a 6.5. So he's launching that thing. They had actually, I don't know if you saw, there was some video. He was hitting balls. It's 311 to the net at the back of the range. And apparently he was hitting some balls over it. So they had to get permission for him to keep hitting balls. So whether that's going to make any difference at Royal Melbourne or not, I mean, we're talking a golf course. It's only 7,100 yards. So I don't know if that's necessarily going to, you know, be a big advantage.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. I'm sure DJ's doing the same thing.
Exactly.
Like, cool, Bryson. You know, he brought that story out there.
Oh, probably.
But yeah, I just think there might be more coming out of this week. I don't want to make any predictions or anything along those lines. We've kind of already gone over that, but I think it might be a tighter race. I'm hoping it is exciting right until the end. At the end of the day, the excitement for me will be kind of those 1v1 matches where can get exciting. Those are always fun too, if you are a bettor, to bet on those things. It makes it so you are watching it, especially once these things get out of hand, which it could happen pretty quickly when you got the roster on the U.S. team versus the roster on the international
team. Hoping by the time they get to the singles, it's going to be worth watching for some reason, whether, you know, some players have a good record and they're playing well, whether the points really matter or not. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios that can happen for this. It's going to be some really interesting pairings. The practice group sort of gave us an indication of where things are going. I mean, first thing, obviously, people were speculating who Reed was going to be with, and it looks like, I'm going to guess he's going to be with Patrick Cantlay, and if you looked at some of the betting odds, they actually had Cantlay with him as well. So we'll see how that plays out, and, you know, that could be something that's early on. Would Woods take him on? I don't know. You know,
didn't work last time.
That's true. So, I mean, we look at those pairings. You know, obviously Paris is much different than Royal Melbourne as far as the golf course is concerned and set up. But yeah, there's definitely going to be some interesting dynamics in the pairings. Again, with the rookies, with the internationals, that's such a wild card with those
Sungjae Im, with Cameron rookie Smith.
Yeah, I mean, these guys could just, you know, they could go lights out or they could just, you know, burn out. We just don't know how they're going
to
handle
it. Well, Sungjae doesn't burn out, so you don't have to worry
about
that.
No,
he's a robot.
Yeah, there's 30 points up for avail, but he's hoping there's 60. He's hoping to play for like 10 days or something like that. So.
He's hoping there's a playoff.
Yeah, yeah. He's everybody else wants to sprint and he's looking for a marathon.
Yeah, Sungjae, what a guy. Well, no point. We're going to break it all down next week, that's for sure. There's some other great stories coming out of golf, as you mentioned. One of the, you know, very wholesome story coming out of Australia still with a local local golfer that was down there recently.
Yeah, we had the 104th Emirates Australian Open, which is one of the oldest tournaments in the world, was on. And at the same time, they were having the Australian All Abilities Championship. So Curtis Barkley from basically just south of Ottawa, lives in Chesterville, Ontario. He actually ended up losing in a playoff. I had done a story with him the week prior, did a little interview with him. Know him quite well. He won our shootout tournament in 2015, started to play the All Abilities circuit this year, had five kind of top finishes within three, got to 13th in the world. I think he was 18th in the world going into this event. Really excited to go there. He lived in Australia when he was very young, between 8 years old and 11 years old. So going back there was sort of exciting for him. And then, you know, they're playing it concurrently. So he actually was playing on the same golf course, the Australian Club, at the same time as the Australian Open was going on. So he played a practice round with Mike Weir. He got to meet Ernie Els, got to Robert Allenby, lots of other players. And then he ended up...
Hopefully didn't spend too much time with Mr. Allenby, though.
No, but, you know, it was good for him. I haven't had a long conversation with him yet. I'm expecting to once he's back here in Canada. But, yeah, he loses out in a one-hole playoff. And it was funny because, you know, Matt Jones wins the playoff or wins the Australian Open, and he had to make a five-footer. And as they were doing that, they were tweeting pictures of the All Abilities Championship. They were waiting in the fairway. Their playoff was, taking place, and they were waiting for Matt Jones and the rest of the gang to get off so they could finish out their playoff. So big deal for Curtis, because obviously they had all the spectators there. You know, it was like a major for them, and fantastic to see. And his world ranking is going to be boosted because of that as well. So, yeah, it was good to see.
What a great story. I mean, you've talked about Curtis and his background, and maybe it's a podcast we'll have him on in the future.
Yeah, definitely,
talk about this, but what a player too. He's this good, just a player, that's for sure. And it's just a good story. You know, you make it all the way down there, you get to a playoff, you know, obviously once you're in there you wanted to win, but if you told him that at the start of the week, probably would have signed off on that.
Well, it was funny because he had said to me, if I win, I win, but nobody remembers who's second. But in this case, we are remembering who's second. But to sort of recap it as well, to let people know, Curtis, he's 5 feet tall. He's got seven fused vertebrae in his back, severe scoliosis, didn't know if he was going to live. And then, ended up being a great golfer, as an OVJ champion. And the nice part, too, he was down there for 2 weeks. His fiance was down there with him. She caddied for him as well. So, just like you said, it's just a cool story.
Absolutely. Why don't we head over to our interview? We got a couple things to get into after the break. But you were in California for the last week visiting TaylorMade. Picked up a couple interviews while you were down there. And this is one of them that you booked for us.
Yeah, I spent some time with Nick Taylor, the former number one amateur in the world, won the Sanderson Farms Championship a couple years ago, continues to be a top player for Canada on the PGA Tour, just had a baby as well, so he became a father, which is really great to see. And, it was nice for him just to spend some time, talk about, some golf equipment, about mentoring other players, and talk a little bit about the rise of Canadian players in the sport as well. So we appreciate, Nick spending some time with us, and I think you'll enjoy the interview. All right, we're here with Canadian PGA Tour player Nick Taylor at the Kingdom at TaylorMade, and talking about some of the new equipment and obviously his season so far. Pretty good start to the year for you.
Yeah, pleased with it. I keep on playing RSM for some reason. I've skipped a couple years, and I've MD after missed the cut by one, so I always end the season on a sour note. But no, the start was great. Had some really good rounds, was in contention a couple times, close to the final group, kind of being in the mix. So that was, that's always what you want to kind of start the year, and had a few top 25, so I feel like I'm definitely, the game's where I want it to be, and breaks are nice, but I'm eager to get back at it and get ready for the season.
You've had kind of a bit of a resurgence. I mean, I think the last time we talked, we were at TaylorMade headquarters about a year and a half ago, and you were just starting to have a little bit of a good streak of some things that were positive and happening. Do you attribute to anything in particular that you're doing with your game, or just certain aspects of it?
We've been last May, so about a year and a half ago, I switched swing coaches. I think it was more so just needed a bit of a change, different voice, different eyes. And that helped. Martin McCann, he's been great. Keep it simple for the most part, but you know, not a lot of things changed. It was a lot of setup stuff, a lot of stuff pre-shot, really, that I was getting lazy at, or just wasn't realizing that I was doing on the golf course, which it happens so often with a lot of guys. But yeah, I've realized, which has been strange for me, I've been a drawer my whole entire life, and you know, I would fade the ball if I needed to, but I would see draws more. And mechanically, consistently, shots-wise, just now more of a straight of ball falling to the right, especially with woods, I'm just much more consistent. And it took me a while to wrap my head around that's better for me now because I've drawn it for so long.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if that's just swing changing a little bit over time. I know technology-wise it's easier to fade balls for sure, but yeah, so this fall was probably the first stretch where I was like, hey, I'm just going to fade the ball off the tee most of the time. Say I hit 14 drivers, like I would say 12 of them are probably fades for sure. Holes that I always, you know, growing up, you see dogleg left. I feel like I was taught that you draw the ball in that hole. Mm-hmm. And now it's just showing that just get the ball in the fairway. It doesn't really matter. So I'm seeing holes differently now than I ever have. I feel like my misses are much better with the fade. I miss it left very less frequently, and my right miss is more of a controllable miss. So. Right.
Is that something you look at from a stat standpoint? I mean, you're a guy that looks at that and says, you know, I can validate it that way, or are you validating it more by just performance, what you feel on the golf course, and obviously the results as well?
Yeah, it's a combination of both. I look at stats, but I'm not heavy into the stats. I know what I need to kind of work on. A lot of field-wise, too, it's easy to have a strategy on a golf course, but if you get up in a tee, you're uncomfortable, you're going to guide it a little bit. And I feel like I do that less when I'm hitting the fade because I have more confidence I'm not going to miss it left. And the draw, I feel like I had the two-way miss a little more. So, you know, it's been interesting playing golf courses that I've played my whole career, but now having different shot shape off the tee. Mexico was one where there's certain holes where I never in a million years in the past would have hit cuts. And, you know, I'm stepping up there with confidence and aiming left and starting it over trees or doing whatever. So, I think this fall was a good test run because I played six events. You know, I missed a couple cuts, but I had some really good finishes and some really good rounds. And it's easy to see that long term, it's probably the best thing for me right now.
So for you, I mean, we're here at the Kingdom. You've had an interesting relationship with golf equipment over the years. I mean, you're not a player who, you know, typically changes a lot. You're kind of a creature of habit, I mm-hmm. guess, would probably the way you yeah. kind of say it. So what's it mean for you to, you know, start to look at new product and you know, how hard is it for you in that process to get something new in your bag?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunately I haven't been here for probably 5 years. So it's such a perfect facility to test equipment. You're almost in a bubble. There's just every factor you can control. And there's so many, they've access to so many.
All the tools.
Exactly.
We're standing here looking, you know, in a putting lab where you're able to, you know, roll
everything
putts.
Everything you need, can need is here, so you can tweak things much easier. I've been saying it's very difficult on a Tuesday of a tournament to put a new club in, test it, fully trust in it, then bring it to the golf course. And if you're under pressure, you know, trying to make a cut or trying to win on Sunday, you know, sometimes doubt of that club can come in. So, yeah, it's definitely been probably on me not to make it out here, but it's... Mm-hmm. It's in off weeks. It's hard to get away from your house when you've been away for a while. But this year I was looking to change for a while. I put the new M6 5 wood in. Tried 3 woods for a while. Just couldn't find one that I had confidence in the golf course. Same with the driver. But I hit that driver so well for a couple years that it was really hard to get out. So coming here was great. I found the 3 woods that I really like. Again, taking the golf course is a different thing, but already I see. I have a lot of confidence in.
Do you feel like a kid again a little bit when you come in here to a place like this? I mean, it's a lot of toys.
Yeah.
I mean, you grew up being a golfer, coming, you know, and you know, coveting new equipment and trying stuff. But yeah, has it got a little fun element to you?
Absolutely. When you get unveiled equipment that no one's really used before, and you're testing it, and they want your feedback, all of a sudden you're like, it's just fun, you know. And you know, we're professionals now in a sense where we know what we're doing. We know what we want to see and what we want to get out of our clubs, but to be able to kind of test the stuff. It was really fun, and it sucks it's raining today, but it was fun yesterday to get a good testing session in.
For you, I mean, are you looking to fill any spots this year in particular? I mean, I know you're going to make some switches probably, but was there something that you knew heading into, you know, next year that hey, maybe I really need something different? Or are you, you know, you're just testing some putters here, you know, if something performs better, would you kind of give it some thought?
You know, maybe. I've had my Red Spider for over a year now, and it's last year's my best putting stats by far I've had on tour, so that'll be one. It's not going to get out of my bag pretty quickly. But woods-wise, you know, my woods have been good, but I felt like 3 and 5 would for sure. I get a little more consistent. And again, that's just they have more resources here to be able to check lofts and lies and stuff like that, especially with woods. It's tough to check that kind of stuff and bend it. So, again, hitting it yesterday, you know, that's a small sample size, but it was a really good testing session. And there's a very good chance I'll have the new stuff, all three of them, in to start the new year.
Interesting. You're here as well with Michael Gligic. Now, Mike, you've obviously known for quite some time, but how's it feel for you as, we'll call you a veteran now, sixth year on tour, but how's it feel for you to come in here? And, you know, he's only a couple years younger than you, but to come in here and be sort of that, you know, that veteran player and sort of, you know, there's a Canadian bond, but is there sort of some level of mentorship there?
A little bit. You know, he's picked a few of our brains that have been out there for a handful of years, and I told yesterday, but a lot of the advice I give, it's nothing to do with golf. It's, you know, where do I stay? Where should I eat? Should I fly here or there? You know, there's so much to it outside of the golf that our lives make the golf a lot easier. So that's stuff that, you know, I had help when I first got on tour. I'm trying to help him that way. Golf courses wise, he's going to be at disadvantage his first year just because he hasn't seen any of the golf course, and there's really nothing I can tell him that can help him, you know, not have to deal with that. So for example, he's probably gonna fly to Palm Springs before Hawaii to see one of those three golf courses or both of them, and then fly to Hawaii where, you know, I can stay home longer, I can go, and then I don't need to do that. So he'll adapt, he'll figure it out. He did the same thing last year on the Korn Ferry tour, that he saw none of those golf courses most likely and had a great year. So that's not a big deal I guess people make. It's more of the outside stuff.
Gotcha. And speaking of outside stuff, you obviously have a little addition to your family. How's that going to change things for you, do you think? I mean, obviously, it's a little bit more draw to be at home. Not that you don't want to be at home as it is, but, you know, are they going to come travel with you a bit? Or how's that going to change things, do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an adjustment. We're our test run, we're doing a little Phoenix trip right before Christmas to see, A, what it's like, what we need to travel with, what we don't, how much we're going to be traveling with. So that'll be a good run for us. And then we'll do, starting in Palm Springs, they're going to meet me in Palm Springs to do the rest of the West Coast. Luckily, we live in Scottsdale most of the year, so all the week off before the waste management into that, so we'll be home for 2 weeks, and we're going to ease our way into it, let's put it that way. So, yeah, we'll take it by ear. I think we'll be able to do it. The tour has so many resources of daycare and there's a lot of good stuff for us to make it as easy as possible, but it'll be an adjustment like anything, but I'm looking forward to it.
Your good friend and clubmate, Adam Hadwin's going to be playing over in Australia. Are you going to be watching that a little bit to see? I mean, you probably watched it when he played in it before, but is that something that's going to catch your attention a little bit? Maybe, I don't know, you probably don't watch that much golf on TV, but are you going to pay attention a little bit to that?
I do. I watch, you know, in spurts, I watch quite a bit of golf. It probably depends who's in contention and so on, but I'll watch for sure. Again, I'm much busier at home now than
a
year ago. I probably wouldn't plan on the couch watching that in football, but yeah, I'll watch. I think the international team is really good this year. I think we'll have an advantage of being able to set the golf course up in Australia. I feel like the majority of the team playing Bahamas and flying over is probably some sort of advantage. And I play with Adam that final round of Napa where he almost won, and his game looks really solid. So I'll be watching for sure. I'm not sure how much as of now, but I'll definitely be watching.
Again, Abbotsford related, some things happening there. Ledgeview finally getting a clubhouse. What's it mean to see that happening in your community?
It's great. You know, we've been teased for the last couple of years. There hasn't been a bulldozer in the ground yet, so I honestly don't.
Sure.
Once that starts happening, I'll believe it when I see it, but it's exciting. The membership deserves it. I think it'd be great for the community with being able to host weddings and there's a lot of advantages outside of just being there for the clubhouse. So I'm excited for it again. Once it's built, I think it'll be finally set in that it's finally there. It's crazy how you almost get used to having no clubhouse, and now it's coming back after, I think, almost 4 years.
Yeah, it's wild.
So, yeah, hopefully it happens soon and it gets up. But, yeah, I think the members are happy that the ball's starting to roll.
Related to the community as well, your Pro-Am's been running for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. What's that meant to you to have that running and supporting, you know, other people and kind of giving back a little bit?
It's been great. You know, I was very fortunate to get to team up with Chris Bertram and UFB. Phil Auger is a huge sponsor of their program and the community. And to kind of like piggyback almost with them and team up and make an event, be able to support the community with, we start off with the Starfish Pack with kids in the community and have food, which, you know, you don't think, you know, I've been fortunate, I don't know how to think about that, where, you know, you can help one kid, let alone hundreds in the school district. This year we teamed up with Chilliwack Community Services, where they're very similar. That's one of their charities, but they have multiple charities and they're all helping out the event. We still were able to help out Abbotsford and their community services. So there's a lot of huge things that go along with it, and it's nice to be able to give back and be in that position that we can.
Any thoughts on the current state of the game? Obviously, we talked about Mike obviously getting onto the PGA Tour now. There's certainly a good amount of young Canadian pros coming along, a lot of good college talent as well. Mm-hmm. What's your take on where Canada is, both male and female, with professional and high-level amateur golf?
You know, it starts a lot with probably the national team. You know, it's not a surprise. Like, I've known Derek Ingram for a long time, but Mackenzie Hughes, Corey Connors, you know, Taylor Pendrith had a great year on the Mackenzie Tour, now playing for the Korn Ferry Tour. A lot of young guys that are coming up and playing really well and getting success very early in the PGA Tour. Obviously, Brooke Henderson's amazing, and she's coming out of there. Elena Sharp, I know a little bit, but it's in a great state. And I know there's, like, Adam Svensson comes to mind, where he's a really, really good young player, and he's been on tour, didn't quite keep his card, and missed out on, you know, the Korn Ferry Finals by, seems like, $100 a couple times. But there's so many good young players now that, you know, I think the number on tour is going to keep growing. And, you know, Graham and David, I feel like they've kind of carried that flag for a number of years after Mike and Stephen Ames, and then hopefully kind of Adam and I can take over and this young generation coming up. So it's, I think it's the best it has been, for sure.
Last one for you, Canadian Open, Toronto this year, St. George's. What are your thoughts on that, and how much are you looking forward to it?
I played it in 2010, I believe, and didn't play great, so I don't remember a lot of the golf course. I remember having to go to different golf courses to warm up.
Yes, Islington, yeah.
But I've heard nothing but great things. I remember the golf course being awesome. I remember being very difficult in the practice round pro-am. It was firm and fast, and a bunch of rain came, so I really saw two different golf courses, but I'm looking forward to it. I think we stay downtown, which is always nice to be able to experience downtown Toronto. So I'm looking forward to it. It's nice to kind of change the golf courses up. Last year, I loved Hamilton. I guess we go back there in a year or two, right?
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that golf course. So I hope it's difficult. I feel like Hamilton was a really good test of if you were in play and you could shoot some good scores, but, you know, if you got in the rough, it was definitely penalizing.
Perfect. Great. Appreciate it.
All right. You got it.
Thanks again to Nick Taylor for that interview with Scotty out in California. Good trip, though. You played a couple golf courses out there. Couple different golf courses, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, spent a couple days with TaylorMade, and then, you know, we had designed that we were going to get some golf in. Unfortunately, we had rain for those 2 days, so pushed off the original amount of golf that we're going to play. We're going to visit Goat Hill, which is a municipal golf course that has been revived, and John Ashworth, who's now part of Linksoul, originally Ashworth Golf, has put a lot of effort into bringing that golf course back. And just a couple weeks ago, they had their big annual Wishbone Brawl is the big event they have there, where tour players come out and play with Persimmon Wood. And Jeff Ogilvie ended up winning the event
on a hole in one.
With a hole in one on the ninth hole. So our plan was to go and play Goat Hill on the one afternoon. Got rained out, so we made a tee time for the next day. And thankfully, we woke up and the weather was great. So eight of us trundled out there at 7 o'clock in the morning. glorious place to play. Really fun. 4,100 yards. I think it was like $22 to play it. Had a great time. A couple guys headed to the airport. We played as a six-em in the back, on the backside, which was just a blast. Ran into a couple of locals as well. I was mentioning that to you. We had one guy who was part of the revival group. He had invested and helped the golf course get back on its feet. And the other gentleman was interesting as well. We, you know, kind of dug in, looking into his bag. And I was with Chris Fry. He used to work for the PGA of Canada and now works for TaylorMade. And we look in this guy's bag, and he might have had $100 worth of golf clubs in his bag, but he had like this Tour Scotty head cover. So, you know, Chris goes digging in and pulls it out, and he's got like a Tour Garage Del Mar putter in there. And we're like, oh my God, this guy's got like, you know, $6,000-$7,000 putter with $100 worth of golf clubs. And we're like thinking, what's this all about? No, obviously, you know, Scotty's place is not far from there. And the guy says, oh, I restore cars for him. So he just says, you know, grab whatever. And I'm like, oh, my God. So, yeah, it was pretty funny. And the other guy was carrying
a car restored.
Yeah. Apparently it pays off. Didn't have much of a golf swing, but they were great guys. And the other guy had this old school 1960s high school Palomar golf bag. And they were just, you know, in jeans and T-shirts. And it was just awesome. So that was a good place that way.
That's golf, baby. We need more of that around here.
It really is. And, I mean, it was nice to see. And Chris and I are both that same mind, same as mm-hmm. you. You know, we've talked a lot about that. So while the other guys were headed off, they were going to go back down to Carlsbad area and play Aviara, which is a beautiful resort golf course, but, you know, had played it before. We decided to do something a little bit different. So we were supposed to fly out of Los Angeles that night back to Toronto, and we decided to go and said, yeah, let's go some exploring. Maybe we'll find a par three or something like that. We also thought, oh, let's go check out LA Country Club, which, you know, is about to host a U.S. Open pretty soon, a couple years. And, you know, we're driving out there. And then just so happened we sort of wandered down the one road near it and fell upon this place called Holmby Park, where the Arm & Hammer Golf Course is. And it's a $3 golf course on Thursdays. Couldn't find anybody to take our money. The kid that was working there was too busy rocking out in his headphones. And anyways, it's like
18, amongst other things.
Amongst other things. 18 flags. Actually, there turned out to be only 16. We two holes went missing. We don't know where they went. Didn't really matter anyways. This 30-yard holes up to about 80-yard holes. Some of the greens were, you know, maybe the size of your couch. Very poor condition. Didn't really matter. Tech a club. Didn't even really need our putter because we were like kind of chipping around. Dogs running everywhere. People like doing exercise workouts on the middle of greens. Like literally, like I picture them next to the flag sticks. People standing between us on like a 30-yard hole and the green. And they're standing there doing like a photo shoot with their puppies and stuff like this. And it was just hilarious. All these cars around and people pushing strollers, people sitting on benches. They were just oblivious to us. And meanwhile, we're right below the Aaron Spelling mansion that he built and was sold. Obviously, he passed away a couple years ago. That just sold for $119 million and is 56,000 square feet. So it was such a contrast. Here's this thing a couple hundred feet away that's worth $119 million and the Playboy Mansion around the corner and LA Country Club. And we're playing a $3 Muni. And we had just as much fun as if we would have been out on LA Country Club.
Absolutely. And I think I just said that, like, we need more, something more like that. You know, one of our only local Muni, it shut down. And I think that's a perfect thing. Like, go out there, build it into a pitch and putt instead. Like an 18-hole pitch and putt gets people playing. We've talked about this on the podcast before, where I actually believe we need to be teaching golf from the green back anyways.
Yeah.
Let's start with people learning how to just chip and putt. And it's fun. Anybody can play. And you don't have to worry about score, and I just need to see it more often. You just don't have par three courses around up here.
No.
Maybe it's this fear because we don't get golf year-round in
Canada.
Yeah,
that could be it, too.
It's just like, when I go, I want the full experience, but we need something.
It was just, we called it joyful golf. That's really what it amounted to be. And, you know, it's funny. I talked to a number of people about it afterwards, and they just, you know, they thought, that's just cool. And it really was cool. And you know, not that expensive. And there's kids playing around there. And, you know, but at the same time, lots of people will come there. I wouldn't be surprised when the U.S. Open goes to LA Country Club. You'll definitely see some people going over there to play just to mess around and
why not
chip around in the park. And, yeah, it's plenty fun.
A couple other news and notes coming out. PGA Tour Latino America Championship happened. Former podcast guest,
yeah.
Drew Nesbitt, shirtless wonder from the Shell, I don't know, I forget, some tournament in Florida. He finished T10. pretty yep. awesome to see.
He did. He ended up finishing up 17th on the order of merit, which was great for Drew. And then Russell Budd, who was playing as well, he ended up the year 37th on the order of merit. So that was a wrap up for that tour as well. And then what have we got? Oh, Korn Ferry Tour. Actually, their qualifying wraps up this week. It starts coming Thursday. We have three Canadians in the field, Richard Young, Stuart McDonald, and Taylor Pendrith, who has status already. All these guys have status as soon as they start this
it's
event.
It's all about the...
It's all about numbers. Exactly. It's about getting their, getting a higher positioning so they can get more starts. That's really what it's about. And there's some other notables in that, including some PGA Tour winners. Derek Ernst, who, won the 2013 Wells Fargo and then just sort of fell off the earth. Tommy Two Gloves Gainey, who people will know from the big break, also won the RSM back in 2012 with a 60 in the final round. And then some other sort of well-known names, Chase Koepka, Brooks Koepka's younger brother, Spencer Levine, Ollie Schneider-Jahn. So
that surprised me seeing that on the list.
It is. Yeah, I mean, if you think about that.
Just kind of always in PGA Tour tournaments here and there. I mean, never wears a hat.
No.
Doesn't have that great of hair, but never wears a hat.
Yeah.
But he's always been there. He's always been close. He's been deep in majors before. And here he is down... grinding on the Korn Ferry Tour. I'm surprised he just didn't go back to Europe and just play full time.
Yeah, that's golf. I mean, it's all about we've talked about it before, the meritocracy. You really got to qualify and keep your way out there. You've got to earn your spot. So we'll wrap that up next week and mention who kind of gets through.
Love it. Why don't we hit the mailbag?
Why don't we?
All right, folks. This is the mailbag where we answer your questions. Scotty opens up the Twitter. His phone line, his door is open.
Fax machine.
Fax machine's open. His
telegraph.
His telegraph. He does it by Morse code. He's one of the few people in Canada still speaking Morse code. But he opens up the mailbag. You send in the questions. We ask them on here. And then we answer them.
Hopefully,
sometimes. So, Scotty, why don't you open up that big old mailbag and give me the questions.
All right. So, well, obviously the President's Cup is on, so a couple of them were related to that. First question by someone was, will Tiger have a winning record at the President's Cup? He's got a dual role. He's playing captain. He's a player as well. We don't know how much he's going to play, but do you think he's going to have a winning record?
I do, because I don't think he'll pair himself as kind of the ace or anything like that. I think he'll be playing probably against some rookies, some guys that this their first, that obviously a rookie is their first
time. Yeah, there's seven of them on the
international
side.
But guys that really
side.
Haven't played with Tiger before, that alone is going to be intimidating. So I do think he will. However, that being said, when you're playing with a partner, you never know. Your partner could fly off the rails, right? So if he ends up playing with Patrick Reed, maybe that has some distractions. But I do think he will, just based on the amount of rookies on the international.
Yeah, and he has said that, it'll be team first. He'll take care of those players and then sort
of... But he's also one of the best. He's like, right now you could say he's the best player on the team.
He's number six player in the world right now, and if you look at points as far as gained in the year, he's
the last 4 or 5 weeks,
he's pretty darn solid. So yeah, I played obviously well last week, so his game is sharp. He's got a lot of experience on this golf course, so by far I think he's going to have a winning record. Even if he has a player that's a little bit weaker, he's going to carry them along.
I
he's
want
definitely
him
gonna
versus
be
Sungjae. Robot versus robot.
Well, that's interesting, actually, when you think about it, as far as, who would you like to see him against from a single standpoint? That could be, is Sungjae's your guy?
I just think it'd be funny because he's robot. I mean, if you're actually looking at it, yeah. Adam Scott, from a personal standpoint, though, it's Adam Hadwin. That would be the dream come true. Ooh. But they're probably going to be, it'd be Adam Scott or probably
that would have the Royal Montreal Mike Weir Tiger Woods vibes. I think Adam Scott,
as long as it doesn't have Stephen Ames vibes.
Yeah, there you go. I think Adam Scott would be a good one that way. Adam Scott, he's playing in his 9th President's Cup. If you'll note the fact that he has played on 8 teams, has not been on a winning team yet. He was on a tying team his first one
last
in 2000
team was like 1962
2003 so. That's the only tying team only time ever. So this is his 9th time playing, and he is the golden boy being in Australia, so I think it would only be right from an exhibition standpoint. I don't know where it sits from a competitive standpoint. I don't think nobody really cares at that point. Maybe some people do. I shouldn't say nobody, but I think that would be a nice marquee sort of finish for the event to have Tiger versus Scott.
Yeah, I agree. What else in the mailbag?
All right, we'll roll on down here. It's Tiger, speaking of him as well, like I said, he's now sixth in the world. Someone asked, will Tiger get back to number one in the world in 2020? Thoughts on that?
It's a good future. The way he's playing right now, it's hard to bet against that. And when you got Brooks hurt, you got DJ hurt.
Yeah.
Rory's going to be hard. That guy, he could take over. But, you know, he wins another major. He probably gets pretty close up there. It sounds crazy, but I see a 3-win season out of Tiger right now. He's just that good. So, if I'm seeing that, I guess my answer is yes. It's hard. It's just hard right now to bet against it.
Yeah.
But it's also knowing the past and all the injuries and the things that have come up. One bet, like, he has a fused back. Let's remember this too. So I say yes, I want to see it, but I also don't care too. So I mean, and what I mean by that is that the whole world,
whether he gets the number one or not, doesn't really matter.
Confusing to me anyway.
Yeah. I mean, he's still going to be the number one player to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly. I think the only thing that might hurt him is if he's not playing enough events.
That's true.
You know, he'll have to obviously do well in the quality events that he plays, and he will play quality events. Obviously, he's in all the big ones. So I don't think he'll quite get there, but I'm the same thing. I don't really care. I just want to watch him play.
Yeah.
Whether he's number one or not, it would be a cool another addition to the story, but I don't want to be greedy. I mean, we've already been greedy watching him win 3 times in the last little while and get to the position that he is. Be nice to get that 83rd win. Lots of milestones that could happen. So, I'm not sure he'll get to number one. Math may work against him, but he'll still be the number one guy to watch.
Done.
All right. Another question from a reader. This probably has to do with, Christmas time and stuff happening too, and the holidays and gift giving and stuff like that. But how often should you buy new golf shoes?
If I'm answering this, you can't have it.
We're probably the wrong guys to ask this one.
My wife is answering this question, but she's not. She doesn't have the podcast. I buy a new pair every year. I love having golf shoes, and I try to rotate them as I'm playing.
Number one thing right there.
Biggest tip, if you're ever playing 36 holes, ever, or you're playing back-to-back days, first off, if you're playing 36 holes, you bring 2 pairs of shoes, two pairs of gloves. Gloves are important.
Socks,
and you switch between rounds. Same when you go on golf trips. Guys will bring 1 pair. No, you need 2-3 pairs with you that you're rotating, because that's how you get blisters. That's how you get the sore feet. So if you only have 1 pair and that's what you're wearing every single time, at the end of the week, you're going to be killing. Your feet are going to kill. So I say, have 7, 8. I have like 10 pairs of golf shoes. I buy a new pair every year. It depends on how often you play, but if you love golf, buy a new pair. There's some new styles out there every single year. There's some new Jordans out there. A buddy that just got in the queue on Nike.com and picked up a $350 pair of Jordans is one of 500 in the world or something like that. But hey man, golf shoes, they're the best.
I love them as well. I think we've talked about that before, but yeah, at least have 2 pairs. Mm. So, try to get 2 in your arsenal, and then, kind of, as you said, make sure you rotate them. You know, as a retailer, I always used to push that, not because I was trying to sell more, it sounded like it, but it will make the other ones last longer. And yeah, it's a lot better when you're going on trips. I mean, I took a couple of pairs with me, even though I was going to get 2 rounds in while I was gone. But, one of the golf courses was Goat Hill. So it's called Goat Hill for a reason, because it's up and down and up and down. And I literally had to change. I changed my socks right after that before I went to the other golf course, even though it was flat. So how often should you buy them? Probably at least a pair a year to get, to get 2 pairs in your arsenal, and then, keep going from there.
One of my, two things. A, we talk about how we are pretty casual with the way people dress on the golf course. I think golf shoes is one of those.
I am wearing a Seminole.
Speaking of airports, I saw this great tweet from Shane Bacon. Again, this is just the things I saw on Twitter.
Yeah, you know what? We find a lot of stuff on social, so it's always good part to, a good impetus for conversation, really.
Yeah, so he said, he was down at the Phoenix airport. He said, I saw a group of 40-year-old golf trip guys roll through the Phoenix airport this week.
I love that
with one. With the one friend that just puts the rain cover over his clubs as his travel case. Just for a week, I want to live life like that guy. No worries, no fear. Just trust the system. Good on him. And I was like, because I got a trip coming up to Phoenix. I was like, do I do that?
No. So. And I've seen, and I've seen that where it's just the golf bag, and you're right, they just throw the rain cover on, and it continues to mystify me. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, they don't care. Maybe they don't have any decent clubs in there. You know, knock on wood, I've been pretty.
If you're going on a golf trip to Phoenix, you might have some nice stuff.
Well, probably.
Or hopefully.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty daring not to have any type of travel cover. I mean, I've seen lots of clubs destroyed even within the travel covers. So, yeah, that one's pretty funny. That's for sure. All right. Next question here. Should you invest more money in a good driver or a good putter?
See, this is an interesting one. There's two ways.
You got to come up with an answer.
Well, there's two ways to look at this. If I'm in either or, I'm saying putter.
Yeah, that's
because you use it on every single hole.
Exactly.
Right? And I think it's one of those things that you forget to get fit. Again, it doesn't need to be about the money. It's about the right fit for you.
Sure.
Go get the right fit in the putter. That being said, it's about you, right? Like if you're already putting well, then no, you should invest in a driver that fits you. But if it does come down to one, you need both. Go with the putter. It's going to last longer. It's a lifetime for a lot of them. Like I know you and I both have putters in our that come in and out our bag that are, you know, 10, 15, maybe you have a 20-year-old putter that you're still putting in here and there. So if it's a good putter, it's going to last.
I can't say it any better than that, so I'm not going to repeat it. That's exactly it. I mean, you know, you need that putter every hole. Hopefully not. Maybe you're chipping in or whatever. But yeah, you're right. It really is important as far as scoring is concerned. So put your investment there.
Love it.
All right. If you could play one golf course on the East Coast of Canada and one on the West Coast, what would they be? Private or public? Doesn't really matter.
Nice. Okay. Well, I mean,
I like that one.
Yeah. I haven't been to, I haven't been to either course I'm going to mention. So
Still, it's just more of a preference, right? I mean, there could be desirable ones that you want to play. So
yeah. Well, I got to go to Cabot. If I'm going out East, I'm going to Cabot. I mean, it's like top 10 course in the world, I believe, at this
point. Top 20.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going out there. West Coast, you can go to Shaughnessy, you can go play up in Whistler, you can go play up in Banff. Anything that just gives me some different cool views. But Shaughnessy is always one that comes up out in the West Coast, that's for sure.
East Coast, I would go to Cabot, but Cabot Cliffs is the higher ranked course. I would probably go to Lynx. I just enjoy that golf course a little bit more. I like to play it sort of every day. It's a hard toss-up, though. I love Old Highland Links, which is, you know, the Stanley Thompson golf course, but probably Cabot Links just because it's more on the ocean, and, you know, you can see that the whole time. Well, I shouldn't say it's the ocean. It's really the strait, but, you know, it looks like the ocean, and, enjoy that. As far as the West Coast, Cabellano's my favorite out in the West Coast. Another Stanley Thompson, great views, old school private club, unfortunately, but a fantastic place to play. Was fortunate to play it early on in my golf career and haven't been back, and I certainly would like to. So those are my two, Cabot, which is, you know, in agreement with you, and then Capilano, but certainly Shaughnessy would not be a slouch and would certainly be part of that conversation.
Nope, not at all.
All right, we got one that's directly to you.
Oh, fan mail.
There you go, fan mail for Stefan. How did you get to caddy on the PGA Tour? So I think this is a curious player who might be looking to maybe get out there on tour themselves.
Yeah. Well, then there's going to be two answers then. If you are curious, I'll get to that in a second. This is a shooting your shot story, basically. And what happened was good buddy who's been on the podcast many times, Kyle Peters, who is Corey Connor's caddy, shot me a text and just kind of said, hey, like, they might be looking for caddies. Kai's don't realize Canada is a different country.
So this is at the Canadian Open,
RBC Canadian Open last year. Guys might be looking for caddies.
Or this year, I guess it was.
And, you know, guys didn't realize Canada is a different country. Maybe their passports weren't working. There was a lot of there was a lot of panic for a lot of guys that were coming over to Canada. At the time, it will become an event where the biggest players come every single year. But there's a lot of those guys that have very limited status on the PGA Tour that do come. And with limited status means you've got
Funds.
Limited caddy, too.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
So basically, I was able to, he gave me the Caddy Masters email, shot an email saying, hey, heard some guys are looking for a loop. Here's my number. Here's my experience. I had done some amateur events. I caddied out on
the Mackenzie Tour
a couple times.
Yep.
So I know what I was doing to an extent. Not as much as reading a yardage book as I had to get you to teach me that 10 minutes before my practice room. Sorry, Martin. Shot my shot. Got an email back that night that the guy was looking for a caddy. It ended up falling through. Got a phone call later that night from another caddy saying, hey, this might work out. Fell through. And then all of a sudden I'm getting a phone call from Martin Trainers asking if I wanted to come loop the next day and the rest of the week.
Which is pretty funny considering it was a PGA Tour winner all of a sudden.
Like a month prior. Yeah. He had won a PGA Tour. And that was, yeah, I found that phone call at 3 a.m. The night before our practice round. So I was like, Martin Trainer, like I recognize his name, looking it up, obviously. Yeah. He won this year, and then I was up all night. I think I may have slept 2 hours that night. And then, yeah, we did our practice round, and the rest is history. And then from there, we've just kind of kept in touch and, you know, backup caddy. And anytime he needs a guy, I'll hop on a flight and get there, that's for sure. But if you're actually looking to get out there on any tour, you can pretty much start anywhere in terms of go out and learn the ropes in terms of, like, playing in amateur events, where to stand, where not to stand, read a bunch of articles, and then volunteer for like a McKenzie Tour event. Pretty much anybody can volunteer for those. They're just looking for people. You'll go through their little caddy school type of thing like that. You'll learn how to properly rake bunkers.
Did they do that caddy? I never even saw that. So I guess I wasn't technically just a volunteer when I was caddying. With certain players.
If you're with somebody specific, then that's a different story. They assume you can do that. You go through the caddy school. You'll learn things to do, what not to do, things like that, and then they'll get you out there and do a couple of those events, get comfortable, get some contacts, and then the next step is definitely get out on the Symetra Tour. It's a grind. We've talked to Nate, we've talked to Des about this. These are tough things to do.
Don't expect to make millions of dollars, that's for sure. This is something
or hundreds.
Yeah, this is something you're going to be probably doing on your own dime.
Yeah, go back to the first interview with Des and listen to these motels he had stayed in, where a murder occurred while he was sleeping, and then he became the main suspect as he was the only one in the motel. So that's episode one of this podcast. If you haven't heard that episode, go back. Die laughing. But, yeah, go out on those tours. You're going to have to grind, get some contacts. My story is a fluke.
Yeah.
And I'm not out there full time. I don't think I could do it. I'm not built for that full time life. I'm lucky to get to do it once. I'm twice as lucky to do it twice. There's more billionaires in the United States than there are caddies on the PGA Tour. So if you think you just start there, you don't. I shouldn't be out there considering the other guys out there. But Martin's a great guy, and he asked for me back. I think he thinks I'm a charity case. But again,
he's probably right.
If you are listening and you do want some people to get in touch with, reach out to us. We can get you in touch with the right people. But yeah, go learn, grind it out, make some mistakes, because I can tell you from that story I told a few episodes ago, when you make a mistake on the PGA Tour and Kevin Chappell's staring at you right through your soul.
While he's on his way to shooting 59.
It was the day before, thankfully. But while he's looking at you right through your soul, it's pretty scary, because these guys are dealing with millions of dollars, and it's not just a fantasy camp. It's a fun experience, but it was one that came from a complete fluke. And again, shoot your shot.
Yeah, harm. And that, you're right. That's really what it comes down to, is that, you know, if that's what you want to do, you can't just sit back. They're not going to call you up.
No one's calling you. No. Martin didn't call me again. I for lack of a better term, pestered him and made sure I was in his life for after the Canadian Open. And it's the same thing. And you come and go as caddies. Like, you know, there's guys out there that follow the PGA Tour. They don't even have a regular bag. They're just hoping that somebody doesn't have a caddy that week or a Monday qualifier gets in. It's a tough life to live, but it's a great one too. If you love traveling, you know, I don't know any caddy that hates their job out there. It's worth it, but it's a tough thing to do. But reach out.
That's awesome. Thanks. Thanks for sharing that, because that's great for those people that, you know, don't really know how it works. But for them to hear that, you know, from your experience, especially, you know, yours being a random experience, a lot of times people will be friends with a player. They'll have caddied for them maybe when they're on lower tours or things like that. But, you know, to automatically sort of get out there and, you know, you obviously, as you said, you had the McKenzie Tour experience. So it's not like you were inexperienced.
It's a whole other ball game.
It is a whole other ball game. And they should make sure that, you know, don't try to jump out there and jump onto the PGA Tour. It's probably not a wise thing to do. Even if you're a good player, there'll be stresses that you won't even think about until you're out there and realizing that these guys are playing for millions of dollars.
And that's the thing, right? Like, you don't even think about the smallest details. Mm-hmm. So that when you're out there, like, random rules that come up, you know, like where to stand, the other guys that you're with, right? Like, you can tell your buddy to screw off when you're caddying in a group in your club championship because his money's not on the line. It's his pride, right? That's completely different. But yeah, like, to go back and do it this way, like, I live kind of by this fake it till you make it motto in my life. That was one where I think probably, you know,
you overdid it.
I may have overdone it. Did it. But, you know, it ended up working out in the end. It was just a great experience. But it's, yeah, as you said, you'll never know until you get out there how terrifying it can be. But the key there is the Mackenzie Tour is the best way. They always
really
need
is.
Volunteers.
Yep.
I had a buddy that did it last year. He said it was the best 2 days of his life. I mean, the guy that he caddied for, he said, hey, I might have full-time status out here next year. My buddy has summers off. Would you come out? And he's perfect for that. That's how a lot of these guys do it. As you said, they find a guy at these development tours, and then they stick together, and here they are in the big tour, right? So it's a lot of luck, though. I think every PGA Tour caddy will tell you that.
Perfect. Thanks. And that was, that was our mailbag for this week.
Why don't we hit the tip of the week and we'll wrap it up?
All right. One last thing here. And this actually came from being down in California and being in the putting lab with Dwayne Anderson, who takes care of a lot of their putting stuff down at TaylorMade. And he was actually working a little bit, looking at some things of Michael Gligic, who was on this podcast about a month ago, I guess it was. And we had a conversation down there, and he was set up and doing some things with his putting that he didn't kind of realize he was doing. And one thing that a lot of people do is they sort of get caught up in their own setup. And this was something Michael was doing, and a lot of people do. They sort of focus on what they're doing while they're standing over top of the ball, and they sort of pay very minimal attention to their alignment to where their target is, which is surprising, really, since it is kind of the most important thing of where you're ended up going. So one of the things you want to do is that keep a lot of your focus, spend a lot of your time connecting what you're doing in your setup to the target itself. And that's really, really important. And what will end up happening is if you don't do that, you'll actually make a lot of compensations in your swing just because you set up what you think is perfectly, and then all of a sudden you go to make your stroke, and then you realize, oh, maybe I'm not actually lined up to where I need to do, and then start making compensations, and you end up with a poor mechanics and missing putts. So pay a little bit more attention to the target. Don't just give it a single glance. Give it a little bit more than that and ensure that what you're doing in your setup is aligned to where you need to go.
I love it. I mean, this is the perfect time to be practicing.
Exactly.
Winter time. Yeah. I got to get the putter back in.
And we were in an indoor situation as well, so it's perfect that way.
Go get a putting green if you haven't got one yet, or like just even go grab a mug out of your cupboard.
Anything.
And use that.
Yeah.
Carpet's just fine to practice the fundamentals.
Good mats are really. I was on a show in Ottawa just talking about Christmas gifts and stuff like that. And then one of the things I said was, you know, some of the well putt mats, putt out mats. You know, it's worth the investment if you're a diehard golfer and you're trying to work on your game. You know, spending a couple $100 on a better mat, something that rolls more like a real surface, can pay off really big when the springtime starts. And, you know, it's a good way to while away the winter. And maybe you're watching the hockey game or something. You can knock a few putts, work on that stroke, and then it kind of keeps you in touch with it. So when, you know, springtime comes around again, you've got a good stroke.
Yeah, nothing will get your confidence better to start the year than putting well to start the year. I think your swing's going to be what it is when you start the year. It's not going to be perfect.
Or worse.
Yeah, it's going to be worse. But you know what I mean? Like, it is what it is at that point. You're just out there to have fun. But the putting, if you got that dialed in all winter, you're going to feel much better, especially if you're going on trips and things like that. You know, I got a trip coming up. I got to get the putting going because I haven't putt at all. I've been hitting the indoor range, but I got to just make sure I putt because that's where it's going to come down to. But that's the end of the episode. We've talked Patrick Reed. We've talked silly trophies, President's Cup, caddying on tours. It was a fun episode. Again, we apologize last week. You know, things happen. Scotty was in California. I was in Toronto. So we couldn't do an episode, but we are back for some more weekly episodes. A lot of good content coming up with a lot of interviews from the trip that Scotty was just on. So look forward to that. Thank you, Nick Taylor, again for the interview. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Make sure you like, subscribe, rate us 5 stars, 5 stars only. Leave us some feedback, and we'll be back next week. So we'll see you then.
right into slow motion, and a day like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.